If you are a fan of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast and would like to help support the show, there's a great way that you can do that and start a new fashion trend. We have a new merchandise page on the website, which features t-shirts and hoodies that are available for sale on Amazon. Just click on merchandise in the top menu and all of the links will be there, or go directly to divebarrockstar.com/merchandise. Get started early on your Christmas shopping at divebarrockstar.com. Welcome to the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, a show exploring the lives of professional musicians of all types, touring musicians, recording artists, songwriters, engineers, bar bands, wedding bands, and anyone making their living in the music industry. Whether you've dreamed of being a professional or you already are one, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Eric Baines, and I hope that you not only find some entertainment here, but also some helpful tips, trade secrets, and ideas that will help you achieve your dreams. Happy New Year, everybody. I know it's a little late. We're 3.5 months in, but it's my first podcast of the new year. So I always like to just tell people Happy New Year the first time I see them in the new year. I don't know. That could be June, I guess, but I don't know. That annoys a lot of people. I understand. They've let me know. But Happy New Year. I said it again. I hope it's going well. I hope that your New Year's resolutions are hanging on 3.5 months in. Hope you made all the good ones and you've been able to maintain. My year kind of started about a month ago when I left on a tour with a band that I get to play with every night called Chicago. And it was just amazing. We got to do 3 weeks in Las Vegas. If you know me, you know that's one of my favorite towns in the whole world. It's not quite as fun as it used to be, I think, because it's gotten pretty expensive. There's no more $2.99 prime rib. But it's still an amazing place. The entertainment there is second to none, including Chicago, of course. But I got to see the show Absinthe on my last night, and I've seen it before, but it's just an amazing show. I will warn you, it's raunchy, so don't bring the kids and don't bring the in-laws or your parents, maybe. It's going to get weird, but it's super entertaining and just an unbelievable show. And also in that time, we did the fan convention for Chicago fans that was at the Treasure Island, where I think it's like 150, it's sold, they only sell a certain amount of tickets. It's like 150 people, and we do panels and a private performance for the fans and a lot of signing, and it was just a complete and total blast. And I saw a lot of Dive Bar Rockstar podcast t-shirts. They were out in full force. So thank you. Thank you for buying those and wearing those. You were absolutely seen and noticed, and I can't thank you enough. The Chicago fans are just the best. I really appreciate each and every one of you. But I'm also happy to be home, back to the podcast, and this is exciting. Right before I left, I recorded this interview. So when you hear references to leaving on Saturday, that was a month ago. So if you're confused about Chicago dates, that's why. So sorry about that. But my guest today is the first guest on the show that isn't from the Los Angeles area. He resides in another great music city. In fact, a place that calls itself Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. He's an incredible guitar player who has toured and recorded with huge artists like Susie Boggess, Jody Messina, Cindy Thompson, Winona Judd, Leanne Rimes, The Wreckers, Little Big Town, Gretchen Wilson, Big and Rich, Peter Cetera, and all kinds more. Those of you familiar with Chicago will definitely know him well. He's an amazing musician, a hell of a guy, and my bandmate. Please enjoy my conversation with Tony Obrada. Well, I wanted to start actually with your Chicago story and getting the gig, because I know you've probably told it a million times, but it's such a great story.
All right.
and people love to hear it, I think.
Yeah.
And you haven't told in a while.
Yeah. I can't remember where I was at. I think it was at the Christmas party. I got stopped like 5 times. People were like, is that story true? I was like, yeah, it's true.
So from your own.
All right.
Here's the truth.
See. long story short, got a phone call and they said, hey, we're going to send you some material. We want you to start learning it. You know, the possible temp situation or, you know, taking over the gig.
Got you.
So I had 3 weeks to learn it. No charts, nothing, just a board tape, you know, and trying to decipher Chicago, you know.
Right.
And trying to memorize it. And I also had to put together a whole new rig because they were using fractals and I didn't have one because I'm an amp, you know, love playing through amps.
What are you, a guitar player?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I like tubes.
Right.
So, you know, I'm every day for 8 hours a day, I'm just trying to learn a song and trying to get a sound together, trying to get cables, trying to get everything put together. So the third week, I told my wife, I said, by the end of the week, I'm going to be able to play this music from start to finish and I'm going to know it. I'm going to memorize it. So Thursday rolled around and I'm sitting watching Thursday Night Football and I'm playing no music, just me and the guitar. And I got done and I walked in. I said, I did it. And she said, wow. She said, do you think that you could play a show? And I said, I don't know. I said, if I had to, possibly. Yeah. Mm. So Friday, Peter Chivarelli called me and said, hey, we're playing in Louisville and we want you to come up and see the show. We want you to, don't tell anybody that you're going to be there. Just come in and watch the show, you know, see it from an audience perspective, where they move and all that stuff. And I really didn't want to because I wanted to keep practicing, you know.
Right.
But I was like, well, he called, got to go. Mm-hmm. Got a hotel room, drove up Saturday, got there at about 3:30, something like that. Had some time to kill before the show, went, got some dinner, had a beer, had another beer. So I was like, I'm not playing, you know, it's like, right. Have a couple beers and just go back to the hotel, go to bed. So I'm standing in line with these older ladies and we're cutting up and having a good time and the doors open and everybody starts walking in and my phone rings and it's Lee. And he says, hey, where are you? And I said, man, I'm coming in to see your show tonight. He's like, do you know where backstage is at? And I said, yeah, I do. Cause we had just, I just played there with Big and Rich, like, I don't know, a month prior or something like that. So,
oh, wow.
So I knew the alley and all that.
Right.
And, he said, do you know where backstage is? I said, yeah. He said, can you play tonight? And I figured he was just jerking me around, you know, like you know, making sure I was ready or something. And I said, yeah, sure. He said, no, really, can you play the show tonight? And I went, yeah, I can. He said, well, meet me backstage. I was like, oh, shit. You know, I'm hightailing it down this alley. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, is this for real? And
wow.
And I walk in and Anthony Aquilotto, our production manager, was a guitar tech at the time. So I walk in the door and he's the first person I see. And he's just got this big shit eating grin on his face. He's like, how you doing, AJ? You know, he said, come over here. He's like, here's his guitars. I'm like, what the hell happened? He said, Keith fell down the steps and he broke his wrist. He can't play. Wow. I'm like, oh my God, this is for real. You know? So, I immediately grabbed his guitar, put it on and it hung down to my kneecap. You know, I was like, oh, you know, so I'm changing straps and everything. And I'm, you know, now I'm in go mode, you know, cause it's like, oh, this is going down. So,
right.
I walked out. I was like, well, let me see his pedal board. I got to see what he's got, you know? So I walked out and there's a Bradshaw switching system, which I have never used before in my life. None of it's labeled, nothing, you know? And I'm like, oh shit.
And like, how many switches is
in something? I don't know. Like, there's like a bank of like probably 15 or 20, just switches. Oh, that's, man. It. Nothing labeled at all.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, oh no, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Is it this one?
Yeah. Right. You know, so luckily he was still there and he came out and he's, you know, his arms in a sling and wow. I'm like, man, that sucks. And he's like, you know, and he's obviously in pain, you know, he's getting ready to go to the hospital and he's like, step on that, step on that, step on that, step on that. Good luck. And then and that was it, you know?
Wow.
So,
jeez.
Scotty, our monitor guy, comes up and he says, do you have ears? And I said, actually, yeah. Oh, I said, I do have my ears. I said they're back
in-ear monitors.
In-ear monitors, yeah, sorry. yeah, I do have ears.
Which are essential to do a show that has no amps.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And no gear, really.
So, and I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to be, you know, walking into this guy's mix. I don't know I'm going to hear any of it. You know, it's all just up in the air. So they got me a runner. I ran back to the hotel. I ran up to my room and I'm looking for my ears and I can't find them. I'm like, no, I know I brought them with me, you know? So, so the runner was really cool. And I'm like, dude, I said, take me over to my car. Maybe I left them in my car. So we hightail it. This is only like a half hour before showtime that we're doing this stuff. And, hightail it over to the car. I look through the car and I'm like, son of a bitch, they're not here. Went back to the gig. I was like, Scotty, I don't have any. So he gave me just a little generic, you know, Bose, whatever, molds. And this is like 10 minutes before show and got my ears, got the pack, got the guitar, put the guitar on. I turn around. There's Jimmy Panko. He's like, you ready? And I'm like, I can hardly fucking wait. So, you know, so I met Jimmy and I didn't meet anybody else. There was no time.
Right, right.
And I met him and walked on stage in the first song's introduction. And I mean, and it's like, you know, everything that I had learned the last 3 weeks just kind of kicked in.
Yeah.
And my only thought was like, okay, you've listened to this a lot of times and you know it from board tape. Now listen to them. And let them lead you, you know, and if there's something that's going to be that you're not exactly 100% on, you know, just lay low and, you know, pick your moments and, you know, try not to screw it all up. You know, if you're going right. to screw something up, just screw that up. Don't screw it all up.
Right, know? Right, right.
And, I'm in t-shirt and jeans and a Radiohead t-shirt, you know, they're all in, you know, they're all looking like Chicago, you know?
Right, right.
And, you know, the solo comes time to do the solo and introduction. And I was thinking, I was like, well, I could just stand here, you know, and just try to play good. And I was like, ah, fuck right. it. I was like, fuck it. And I walked up to the lip of the stage and there was a monitor or, you know, a front fill was up there. Mm-hmm. I just popped my foot right up on it and started ripping. And that like calmed me down. Cause it was like, okay, I'm back in I'm on stage now. I can do this, you know?
Right. Right.
And, the show went by like a blink, you know, I met the rest of the band at the first intermission. You know, I was like, hey guys, how's it going? They're like, who the hell are you? I was like, wow. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And then walked off stage and Steve, tour manager, walked up and said, you've got a flight tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. from Nashville going to New York City. Be on it. And so I had to turn around and drive all the way home. You know, right. I got home at like, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that. I was following a trucker because I was the adrenaline wore off and I was falling asleep. And Peter called me on the way home, was like, my God, thank you for saving us. And you're saving our weekend because the New York show the next day or two days later was the opening of the new hockey arena in Long Island.
Oh, man.
And it was like Irving Azoff's, you know, baby.
Right.
And it was all for the people who had put all the money in on it. And so, I mean, that was that was my second gig. Yeah. and the rest is history.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great story. And I think it's also like a great lesson in be prepared, you know, and learning the stuff and really learning
things. It. Yeah.
Like, I mean, don't show up to the gig and kind of know stuff.
No,
I
hate, like, you know, you'll go into a rehearsal or something for some gig and people think that rehearsal's for actually learning the song. And it's like, no, man, you know, rehearsal's for like nailing it down, not learning it.
Right. Practice at home. This is a rehearsal.
Yeah. And I mean, that was like the other thing too, is just because the music was more complex than country, you know, not knocking country, but it's 3 or 4 chords, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to have a different mindset, a different approach to learning the song. And it was almost like learning a classical piece where you're learning it one bar at a time until you can, you know, string together 4 bars. Okay, now 8, you know.
Right.
And that's pretty much how I did it every day. I'd take like one song or, you know, one song in the morning, one song in the afternoon. Then the next day I'd hit those two and then I'd add 2. You know, so by the time I kept going, I would, you know, oh, I made it through the first set. You know,
that. Yeah.
And then just making sure every day that it was like, oh, I missed that, you know, oh, I missed that, oh, I missed that, you know,
right.
Don't miss it tomorrow, yeah, you know, yeah, that, yeah. That kind of stuff. So,
yeah. And how many days you think it took you?
Oh, man. Once I got, you know, because, you know, these songs, I mean, these chords, yeah. These chords are not, you know, they're all over the place.
Right. Yeah.
So I think once I got my hands around just the chords, first of all, in a song, mm-hmm. you know, all told, it took a good 2 weeks to really yeah. think, okay, I do know this, you know, I can mm-hmm. pick this up and I can play this along with it.
And know it like you're going to go on stage and do it. There's a difference between like, yeah, I kind of know the song. I could get up in a cover band at a club and play it.
Right.
Or I'm going to get up in front of 5,000 people and I don't want to suck.
Exactly.
And I need to sound like I've played this stuff a million times.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And I would, while I was learning it, I would put myself in that situation too. I was like, okay, dude, you know, you're on stage and you just broke a string.
Play.
You know, or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. You know, you're on the other side of the stage now, you know, just that situational awareness kind of, just to make myself think about it, because I knew that, you know, when you get on stage, I mean, shit's flying all over the place and you can get distracted really easy and you look down and you've missed, you know, a whole bar, you know, or something. Yeah. And it was like, so I kept trying to put myself in that situation, thinking like, okay, you just got distracted, now, you know, play.
Yeah.
So,
and that's one of the things about Chicago show too, is like, which I love, is like, it's a show. We're not standing there.
No.
We're not the Eagles.
No.
Standing in our place,
right.
Singing our songs, you know, which that's great too. But
yeah.
But it's like, you kind of have to have even more of a grasp of all the things. It's got to be in your muscle memory, mm-hmm. because I don't want to think about the music really.
No.
You know, I want to think about that person up front and smiling at everybody and where you have to be on stage.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Step on that pedal now, you know, or I mean, not for you, but for me, you know, it's like, okay, get your moves down and then.
Yeah.
And then
who am I supposed to dance with on this song?
it's usually you.
I know. I'm over like, okay, it's Neil this time, or Lee,
right?
Or I'm up on the riser or whatever.
Right. Or it's either that or Panks, trombone is stuck right in my face, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, oh my God, that thing's loud. that dude's got some air.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I know him. It's like a marching band guy.
It is. It really is, man. Yeah. Yeah. He's on the 50-yard line of Notre Dame, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every
but he's
night.
Also like the energy of the stage. Like he's the most out there doing stuff. And you know, I know me and you kind of got reprimanded one night
for
like not rocking hard enough.
Yeah.
And I walked away from that with like, great, I can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I could put more. Like, I just love that. It's so much better than, dude, you're not playing good enough or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, it's
right.
They're the first people that said before we went out, hey, just have fun. Make sure you have fun.
Yeah.
And meant it.
Yeah,
because no, totally. I've heard it before, and
they don't mean
and
it.
And it wasn't fun.
Right. I've been there, done that. I was talking with a friend of mine last night, and we were just talking about a gig that we used to be on together. And I mean, when we had a ball, you know, like we had way too much fun. And but it was a paycheck gig, you know? And it was like, and we were just talking about the difference of it, you know, like, because he's got like a really cool gig right now, too, you know? And just the difference in thought processes and stuff. And it was like, you know, we used to just go out there and just be on autopilot, and it was a paycheck gig. That's what it was. And it's like, this is not a paycheck gig.
No.
This is like, I'd bleed for this. I already have, you know, but it's like,
right.
I don't know. It's just a different,
different
level of intensity
and presence. You got to be present.
Yeah.
You can't zone out really.
Oh no, God, no.
And they would catch you.
They would.
Like, I think that's kind of what was that conversation was about, really. I remember we were in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
It was like we were just getting started again after 2 months off.
Right.
And so I'm just like, maybe it's, you know, it's a classy theater.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't jump around so much. And,
yeah.
And like, I don't know that I would ever zone out on that gig, but it would be obvious.
You know what I mean?
Because everyone is really present and doing it every night.
That's the cool thing about like those guys, like the three originals, is their ears are incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, you know, they hear everything. And it's like, and you don't even think they're listening sometimes, but they are.
Yeah.
they know.
You
know?
Yeah. I mean, and we record every night.
And we do. Yeah. So, but I mean, Lee came up to me one night and he would, you know, he didn't bust me, but he was just like, hey, you know, the line in the ballet that you play, you know, with Lauren, he was like, you know, you need to play that more staccato. And I'm thinking, holy shit, you hearing that through all of this other, you know, piles of people that are playing music and you're hearing, you're hearing legato versus staccato. And I'm like, well, good on you, bro.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and he was right.
And 57 years in, they still care.
Oh God.
Yeah. You know, they're not phoning it in either.
No, I know.
Like, this is their music. This is their baby. You know, they're out there doing it. Like, it reminds me of we just did this big show in Atlantic City with a bunch of guests and everything. And the promoter wanted to add a solo in Color My World. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy was like, I turned down Frank Sinatra. and he was just so prideful about it. And I was just like, that is so amazing. I mean, two things.
Yeah.
He literally turned down Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
maybe a questionable decision, but like, but yeah, that's the kind of pride these guys have in the music.
I would have added another verse for Frank, I think. Yeah, I think I'd have let him do it twice.
Yeah, he might have you, you offed.
That was one, that was actually, because remember Kingfish did the first night and he wasn't there the second night. So, so what was it like 10 minutes before we went on stage?
Yeah.
Lee comes up to me and goes, hey, do you know the line for Color My World? And I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, I know it, but no, have I ever played it? No, I haven't. He's like, well, could you do it? And I'm like, oh shit. You know, I was like, so he gets his horn and he's playing me the line, you know,
and we're backstage. I was standing right in front of you.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, literally, and like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And Jimmy's throwing a fit because he's like, he'll never do it. He'll never get it. And Lee's over there going, Jimmy, shut up. But he's getting it, you know, and I'm over there just trying to figure out like what position to play it in. That's going to make it easier for me to learn it quickly. You know?
Yep.
So I wanted to start there, the hell with the notes, you know, and then little by little, I started piecing it together. And I got it.
And it's deceptively hard.
It's not easy.
Those chords, they sound like they lay out. It's just simple, but it's not really.
No, there's a lot of half steps going on. Yeah. It's like, really? It goes there? Okay.
Yeah. Key changes.
Key change.
Modulation all the time.
Yeah. And I mean, what was it? Like, I literally played it right up until the minute where they said, ladies and gentlemen, Chicago. And you walk on stage and Lee, right before we got on there, he goes, okay, man, you know, if it comes around and you don't feel comfortable, he's like, just play some chords or something like that. Don't play it. And I was like, and that was what, halfway through the show?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm thinking, man, I might forget this by the time this rolls around.
We're adding all these early songs, you know,
Listen.
And the songs that are very complicated. And I'm just trying to squeeze those into my, I'm trying to hold on to all that information.
Right.
And then for you to have to remember even more, it's like.
Well, I took it as a challenge and it was like a point of pride. I'm like, I don't care if I screw it up. I'm doing it anyway, you know? And I did it. I was like, I was proud of myself.
Yeah. But. And that is a nice thing. Another nice thing about these guys is like, there's not really that kind of pressure in that moment. Like if you nail it, you're a hero.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're a hero for trying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They get that they're throwing stuff at you.
And, yeah.
You know, they're reasonable humans.
They are.
They know, most of the time.
Right. I love the, I don't know. I just love the reckless abandon of rock and roll. Like that's like true rocks. That's
and
true
they're
rock and rollers.
Musicians.
Oh yeah.
They're not here for their outfits or their image or their, they really are musicians, which is sort of,
well,
gone by the wayside in you know, modern music, you know, and artists, you know, with exceptions of like maybe Jacob Collier or something. There are people that are super musicians, but not like these guys.
Yeah, I was watching the Grammys and my only thought was, man, I should have been a dancer. You know, I mean, it was like, because I think I saw maybe 5 or 6 guitars up there the whole night. You know, I was like, oh man, we're going the way of the dinosaur here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even have a rock category on the telecast.
Right.
They didn't. It was pre-Grammy time. So it's like, okay, whatever, dudes.
Yeah. I remember when Lee first called me and I said, well, I've been working on it already, you know, the music a little bit. And he's like, well, of course you are. You're a musician. I was like, yeah, this is the right thing for me. You know what I mean? These aren't rock stars necessarily.
Yeah.
They're rock stars, but it's comes, but the music is first.
It's a band. It's a, it's that's the collective. I mean, there's not like, it's not like, hey, there's Rod Stewart, you know, and he's up at the front of the stage.
Right.
It's like, it's not that at all. It's like, the music makes the, what, the stardom or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not about us at all. It's, but it is about the collective us.
Right. You know? Right.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And it's interesting. We kind of have that in common because I was with Dwight Yoakam before and I came from country music to Chicago, like you mentioned before. And, it was, it's like a whole different, you know, and I came from jazz before that and sort of pop and but doing a lot of jazz. So to go from jazz to country was kind of a trip for me too, because it was surprisingly harder than I thought. It, like, you know, country, it's like, it has three chords, but it's three chords in every song. So you got to know where those chords happen. And that's almost like harder than a song, you know, like a Call on Me, where the melody kind of lays the chords out and it sort of sings itself in a way.
Yeah.
Versus like, oh, where's the four come in this, this song?
Yeah.
You know, does the bridge go to the four?
Right.
Do you have a 2-5 turnaround?
Exactly.
You know, like there's like little things that will trip you out.
Wait, you added an extra bar? You added an extra beat on that measure before you changed it? Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I love country music. I mean, the old stuff, not the new stuff, but I love the simplicity of it. And it's so simple that it becomes complex because you've got to be able to play to the song, you know, like you can't just bash away on something. You got to have that touch and that feel, and you got to, man, that bend has to be perfect, you know, because it's going to lead into the chorus. And it's like every note is exposed more in country music than it is like, we've got 10 people on stage. You know, if I flub one, you know, chances are you're not going to hear it.
Right.
You know? But in country, it was like, oh, hey, man, he just clammed the hell out of that. You know, it's like, I don't know. So for that reason, I like country music.
But
it taught me a lot to pay attention to like this gig, you know, where, pay attention to every note because it does matter. Even if there is 10 guys on stage, it still matters, you know?
Yeah.
So,
and play the song and, And so you grew up in Illinois.
Middle of a cornfield. Corn on all four sides.
And then you moved to the big city. Or did you go to college?
I went to college. I went, after I graduated high school, I was in love with my girlfriend and I wasn't going to leave, you know? And my mom was like, no, you're going to school. And I was like, well, I don't want to go to school because school and me were just, you know, I mean, I did enough to get by, but like, I'm not book smart that way, you know?
Right.
I just told her, I said, well, if I'm going, I'm going for music and that's it, you know?
Nice.
And they were like, well, you can't read music. And I kind of knew that like in my senior year, I was like, yeah, they're going to make me go to school, but I'm going for music. So I was like, I got to learn how to read, you know, cause they're not going to let me in. So I went to my high school band director. And I was never in high school band. I've always been a guitar player. So I went to him and I said, hey, man, can I get a music theory class? And I mean, Streeter, Illinois, they're not making music theory class. You know what I mean? So I don't think it had made in like 20 years or something.
Right.
So I said, can I get an independent study? And he's like, sits me down on a piano and he says, okay, well, I'm going to give you an ear training test. And I went, okay, you know, and I know, you know, it was like, I had known enough about like, oh, it's a, you know, perfect fifth or whatever, stuff like that. No, man, this dude sits down at the piano and he starts playing these two-handed chords, you know, and he'd look at me and go, okay, what's that? And I'm like, oh shit, I'm going through my Cheap Trick and my Led Zeppelin Rolodex in my head going, okay, well, that's a G major, you know, and he's, what's this? Well, that's a D minor, you know? And at the end of it, he goes, well, said, you've got some ability. He said, but you're not worth my time.
Eesh.
I mean, really, literally said that. Dude.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, wow, okay, I guess I'm not, you know? And I mean, I went home, told my mom that she about took off. I mean, she called him and she called him every name in the book and he deserved it. You know, I was like, you're a music teacher for God's sake.
Totally. At a public school.
Right. And you got a guy here who actually wants to learn, you know? And anyway, long story short, I go to audition and they weren't going to let me audition because I couldn't read music. again, my mom said, I don't care if you take him or not, this kid's coming in and he's going to play for you. And they were like, okay, you know. So I had been learning by ear. My uncle turned me on to Michael Hedges, and it was like,
oh, yeah.
You know, this is like pre-Joni Mitchell for me. So it was like my introduction to open tunings. And I was like, oh, man, a whole new world, you know, outside of Jimmy Page, you know, Zeppelin stuff.
Right.
But so I started learning this piece by ear, and I did it. Like, I figured it out and went in and played for these dudes, and they're like blown away, and they're like, well, how did you learn this? And I was like, well, I don't know. I just figured it out. You know, how'd you learn the tuning? I was like, well, I, you know, messed around until it sounded right when I was like, you know, these open strings rang a certain way. And well, how'd you figure out the fretting? And I was like, well, it just sounded to me like, you know, like he was playing on the seventh fret, you know, like versus the third fret or what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just learned it that way. And they're like, okay, you're in. And I was like, great, cool. So, I mean, I played catch up for 4 years trying to learn theory.
Right.
And then 2 weeks after I graduated, I was in Nashville.
Wow.
I mean, I came down, a guy that had graduated a year prior was down here and had an apartment, came down and didn't know anybody but him, and he wasn't in the business. So I was like, you're on your own, kid. You know?
Right. Gotcha. So
first night we came down here, once we finally found the place, moved in, and me and my dad were like, well, let's go out and see some music, you know? So we went down to Lower Broadway, and not like it is now, kids, bring a knife, you know? And it was great, man. It was so awesome. It was like, you know, just slimy and just outlaw. It still had that outlaw feel to it, you know, like the Waylon era, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking down the street and heard some music playing. I was like, well, that sounds pretty good. So let's go in there. You know, so we walk in, and my first night in Nashville, Tennessee, I walk in and Nigel Olsen's playing drums. It was Nigel's club. It was Diamond in the Rough on Lower Broadway.
Wow.
It was, and he owned a piece of it. It was Nigel. I think it was D of, is it Murray? Elton's bass player. I think it was him on bass.
Wow.
But it was Ray Flack and Albert Lee on guitar.
Jeez.
And I mean,
wow.
I mean, that's like basically, I don't know, it's the benchmark of chicken picking, you know?
Right.
I mean, it was like this master class of guitar playing. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, I can't do this.
They didn't teach me that in college.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm trying to throw off Pat Metheny, you know?
Right.
And, but it was so great, and it scared the ever-living hell out of me. And I was like, okay, man, you're in the big leagues now. It's like, it's time to buckle down.
Yeah. You
know? So.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just to go back, like, it's interesting. I think that's why I knew I wasn't a guitar player. I started playing guitar originally. That was like the first thing I learned. And, but just what you're saying about where to put things, like the guitar always drives me nuts because like, oh, there's an E here and the same E's here.
Right.
And like, whereas a piano, like that's E.
That's E. Yeah. Know, it's like, that E. Yeah. Right.
Right.
That octave. Yeah.
Yeah. So for you to be able to hear that, cause it took me, it wasn't until I started really working with great guitar players where I'm like, oh, that's that sound. That's that thing. Now you listen to record and you kind of know what you're doing, but for you to just naturally figure that out. Like if I were trying to figure things out in high school or whatever, it was just like a mess. Like I could do it.
Right.
It'd sound sort of like the record, but it ain't what the guy's doing.
Right.
So it's never really going to sound like the record cause it's done like that.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for you to be able to pick that stuff out is pretty cool.
Yeah. But I can also say like, you know, I'm sure I did tons of things wrong too, but just the trial and error. I mean, picking up the needle on an album and putting it down, going, okay, well, and retuning because the record's warped or whatever, you know. But it was like just that attention to detail over and over and over again, and then finally, you know, you play it right. You know, you get lucky and you play it right, and you go, oh, it was there, or no, it isn't there. It's down here, you know.
Right.
Or it's, yeah, I don't know. Just
wow. Well, maybe it's just the I don't know. You seem to enjoy learning songs and enjoy, like there's kind of a meditative thing to that.
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. And I mean, I know like right now I could pull out, you know, a Gretchen Wilson song from 10 years ago and I know it's still in there somewhere. I know that if she, you know, if she was here right now and she went 1, 2, 3, 4, I'd be in. And you know, I'd be 85% there, you know, it's like, so just the way that you learn a song, you ended up, you and retain it longer, you know, forever.
Yeah. Very true. Yeah. I think, have you ever been into songwriting at all? Is that
Vaguely. I did one thing with a group of guys. What was it, like 2010 or 13? I can't remember. And we did it. We did a rock album, and it was basically came out of me and Stuart Mathis sitting in hotel rooms with acoustic guitars during the day because we were on tour with Leanne Rimes. So bored, you know, during the afternoons, and like, let's grab some guitars and play, you know. And one thing led to another, and you know, next thing you know, you've got a batch of songs, and we finished them, and you know, I ended up writing a lot of lyrics to it, which is odd because I'm not like a lyrical thinker. I don't. I'm a guitar player, you know. I don't. I don't think about melodies and how they coexist with a chord structure. I just want to come up with a cool jam, you know.
But
I ended up writing a lot of that. I mean, not all of it, obviously, but
that's cool. What's that called? I'll look it up.
Different Size Gods. It's called, the album's called Begin. Cool. And you can find it on like whatever, Spotify and all that kind of crap. But
awesome. Well, the reason I was asking is I always was like a songwriter kind of first and a creator first. And it took me a long time to get the discipline to sit down and really learn songs like the record. You know, I was always kind of the guy who would learn at the record.
Right.
Now, you know, it would depend. I kind of had a rule because I used to do a lot of R&B and jazz. And I feel like that kind of stuff, it's better to just know the chords and emote.
Right.
Versus if you're going to learn an Eagles song or a Rolling Stones song, like play the notes on the record. And it took me a long time to learn that, I think, because like my first instinct is to write. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My first instinct was to learn, like to try to assimilate the, how did Jimmy Page, how did he play that lick, or why does he sound like that? Where does that run come from? Where does it start? Where does it end?
Right.
You know, I wasn't thinking about like writing a song. I was thinking about like, I got to figure out these guys. I got to crack their code, you know, you know, Jimi Hendrix is completely different than Jimmy Page, and it's completely different than Rick Nielsen, and you know, and just trying to emulate tones and feel, you know. I mean, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, I mean, you know, the guy could probably crush a guitar, you know what I mean? And just the way that he attacked the note, and I got into that aspect of it versus trying to create something out of thin air.
Which is great, because those are all the skills of being a sideman / you know, session guy.
It's a like, chameleon.
You need to be like, if the artist is like, hey, I'm hearing some kind of Zeppelin riff, need to be like, oh, like this.
I got that. Yeah, I got that one. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I did a thing one time when I was with Leanne, her husband at the time, just, he dug me, you know, and he was cool and everything. And they were going to do a recording. They were going in for a week at Blackbird, and they invited me. And I was like, wow. No kidding. All right. This will be great. You know, I was like, Matt Chamberlain was playing drums. Oh, Greg Lees was playing, you know, Bukovac. And I can't remember who else was there, but Rami.
Piano player. From Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
I know.
Anyway, so it was like a week with these guys, you know. And I'm just a fly on the wall because I don't do that. That's not my jam, isn't, you know, being in the studio all day. But we were playing, we did one track or something, and I just heard something, man. I was like, you know, being a left fielder, you know, I was like, I'm going to try something different, you know? And so I was playing this rhythm part and stuff, and Dan Huff was doing the producing. And,
jeez.
And he was like, it's like, man, what is that? What are you doing? What's that tone? That's I really like that. You know, it's really cool. It's like edgy and, you know, stuff like that. And I said, I'm just doing my best David Hidalgo imitation. It was like something that I had heard off of one of their records, and I just dug right. the tone, you know?
Yeah.
And I, when I said that name, I just got like this silence. I was like, he doesn't know who that is.
Yeah, that's some West Coast stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like Los Lobos, right?
Yes, yeah. Los Lobos.
Yeah. For those of you out there that also don't know
who that is. Man. A great Lobos story. It was they played at Top Golf, and there was like 500 people there. They didn't promote it or anything. It was when Top Golf just started doing concerts here in town and stuff. So nobody knew that they were even here.
Yeah.
And they came out, and it was only three of them. It was Hidalgo and Conrad and the drummer. And David just said, he was like, man, our whole band is sick. He's like, but we're not. So we're going to play. And,
wow.
And dude, it was so cool. Because it was just like a power trio, you know, and Hidalgo had to take every solo because he was the only player. And finally, like, I went up straight up to the front of the stage, just sitting there listening to him. And he took a break, and he was going to play some accordion. And he reaches down and grabs his accordion. And I just looked at him. I said, David, I said, my God, man. I said, you guys sound like Cream.
Yeah.
He just looked at me. He was like, man, thanks. It's my Hidalgo story.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I actually went too. I was in Denver at the time playing in this blues club, Brendan's Pub, man.
Mm-hmm.
So many nights in that place. And I'm exhausted. At the time, I'm like, I'm probably early 20s.
Yeah.
And I don't drink, and I hate drunks, and I'm making my living in bars at the time. You know, I was very different than
I am
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was exhausted. It's like 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
We played at 1:45. I'm so ready to go home.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of up there, and I like close my eyes, and I open them up, and I look down, and it's Hidalgo and the singer.
Louis? Or Cesar.
Cesar.
Yeah.
And
great,
I'm like,
great player.
Oh God, this night is never going to end.
Right.
Next thing you know, they're up there.
Oh, that's
and they had
cool.
just done their show at Red Rocks or somewhere. And Brendan's was like the blues place in Denver. Like
Dig
if you go in there, that's the hip place to go.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in a blues band at the time, and I did a lot of blues before I did anything, you know, coming out of Berklee College of Music. So I was a punk kid, and like playing three chords a night, blues music was driving me nuts. You know, if
sure,
I was a guitar player, it'd be different, but bass, you know, it's like, this is so boring, but I'm making a living. And but anyway, so sure enough, they got up and we did another 3-4 songs, and the crowd went insane. And but at the end of that, then it was like, all right, I'm awake, you know, it was really, really, really cool.
Dude, that's so cool, man. Now I'm jealous.
Yeah, we had the Kentucky Headhunters came in one night too.
Those guys are cool.
Yeah, so cool. And that was a really fun gig that I'm proud to do. The club's not there anymore, but at the time I hated it.
Right, you know? Sure. This is beneath me.
Yeah, this is not Chick Corea Electric Band.
No, it isn't. But there it is again, though, man. Blues and country music, same thing.
Yeah,
it's like it's how you play that note. It's not
exactly.
It's not the note you're playing. It's how you're playing it.
Yeah, and it's more about emoting.
Because
you're not thinking so much about what the next chord is. It's more about
you already
like,
know what
are
is.
You trying to say musically?
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Right.
Which I think is also the country thing.
You know,
it's the soul music of white people.
It is. You know? Yeah, that's right. And then there's bluegrass.
Yeah, that's some Appalachian emotion.
Man, we used to be on tour. I did a few package tours back in the 90s, like Chesney and McGraw and, you know, all those guys. It was a lot of fun. It was really cool. I mean, like maybe five or six bands that were just traveling around all summer. And so you got to know everybody, and you got to jam, and there's a lot of parking lot jams, and, you know, it always devolved into bluegrass jam, because you know, you'd get that one or two guys that knew every bluegrass tune ever.
Right.
Hey, what about this one? You know, hey, what about this one? You know, and man, that's just not my jam. It's not my scene. I never learned it. And it's a,
right.
I don't know. It's like, like typing or something, you know what I mean? You got to know the vocabulary for those songs, you know?
Right, exactly.
So I'd always feel like a fish out of water. So I always went back to, is like, well, what would Willie Dixon do, you know, in this? And I started like simplifying all of what they were trying to play. And I always ended up sounding like an old blues man when I was playing bluegrass stuff.
Yeah, so that's so funny.
And I'll still do it that way.
Yeah, that's great.
It's more fun.
You should do a record of that.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
And just lean into the blues thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm a die-by-die rock star. I have to confess something. I love books, but I don't love reading. And it's been something that I've wrestled with since I was a kid. You know, I can read, I have read books, but they're very time consuming, and I've spent most of my time trying to build a music career, which takes a lot of time. But one thing I definitely do a lot of is drive in LA traffic on my way to a gig. And there's a solution that combines those two situations, and that's called Audible.com. Audible has thousands of audiobook titles, and you can listen offline anywhere, anytime. The app is free and can be installed on all smartphones and tablets. And they have just a ton of music-related titles, like All You Need to Know About the Music Business by Donald S. Passman, How Music Works by David Byrne, or Music Production Secrets by Calvin Carter. And you can get a free 30-day trial right now if you visit audibletrial.com/divebarrockstar. That's audibletrial.com/divebarrockstar. I'd like to take a second and thank you for listening to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast. Getting the word out is a vital part of what it takes to keep this show on the road, and the easiest way to help is to subscribe wherever you listen, and if you have an extra minute or two, please leave a review. You can also follow our page on Facebook, which is the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast, or follow me on Instagram at Dive Bar Rockstar. Okay, enough begging. I hope you're having a great time. And once again, thank you for listening. So you brought up Nashville. So yeah, because you are my mm-hmm. first Nashville non-LA guest.
All right.
So you moved here and mm-hmm. and coming out of college. So you told the story of hearing some great country music. And so were you hooked at that point, or had you had an education of that coming in?
I grew up in Midwest Illinois. So, dad was, driving down the truck, in the truck, driving wherever we're going to a dirt track to watch race cars, and stuff. And so you're hearing Charlie Pride and Ray Price and he had Waylon records at home, which were like the Bible, what I mean? I love those records. They were just so greasy. I got a Rolling Stones record when I was 4 years old. I borrowed it from my uncle, and I brought it home, put it on my little record player, and it scared the shit out of me. Cause I was like, what is this? This is, oh God. It was like, it sounded wrong.
You could hear the devil.
You could hear it. Yeah, man. So I kept playing it over and over. It was like, I don't know what this is, but I think I like it, but it scares me. I don't know. So Waylon, hey, you can hear that,
Yeah.
You can hear the slinkiness of stuff.
Yeah.
I dug in Reggie Young. My God, what a guitar player, Roy Nichols, what a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what genre you're in. It could be, if you like Eddie Van Halen, go listen to Roy Nichols and he'll blow your head off. I heard the artistry of it and there was a record that came out. Glenn Johns produced it, and it's The Legend of Jesse James.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. Got, Levon Helm, and it sounds like Who's Next, but it's country, mm-hmm.
Right.
And it was like, well, there's obviously more to it than your cheating heart, And I wasn't ready. I wasn't going to go to New York and I wasn't going to go to LA because it just would have swallowed me. It would have been too big and I would have gotten lost. Mm-hmm.
So you decided as a guitar player to move to Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah. With 850 million guitar players.
I did, but it seemed more accessible. I was like,
way smaller town at that.
Yeah. And if I'm going to do it, I need to learn, I need to know what it is that I'm going to do. And I figured that this would be the easiest way to make connections and maybe possibly get a gig, It just made the most sense to me. And luckily, when I got here, I
they had a musician's referral service, Dick McVey's musician's referral service. Oh. You can pay $20 a month. And it was just a sheet that came out every month, and you could go to the Union Hall or wherever, and you could pick up the sheet, and it would show you players that were looking for work or bands that were looking for a player, mm-hmm, you know, and it would, mm-hmm, so just a way to connect players to bands and stuff. And
yeah, in LA, they have musicians contact.
Okay. They should still have it here, and they don't. And it's like, mm-hmm, man, it was great, you know? So yeah. I signed up for it, and, you know, I didn't eat for a week because I had to pay $20, but still, you know, yeah, it was worth it. So, I mean, like when I got here, I'm within, God, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months or something like that. I ended up in a RV, not an RV. It was a van and a trailer, basically touring the Southeast, you know, doing like 4 or 5 nights in a row at a bar, you know, like my first bar gig out on the road. My first road gig was like this shotgun shack bar that was like, the ceilings were maybe like 10 feet high. And you couldn't see because there was just this line of cigarette smoke, you know, like right in your eyesight on stage. Yeah, and it was like, went to the band house and like hit the bed, put something on the bed, and you could just see the fleas just flying off the bed because they had like feral cats that were living underneath the band house.
Oh, man.
It was like, you had to go, we went and got Raid and sprayed our beds before we had to get in at night, you know. It was like, this is touring.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, I've been there. I know.
Yeah.
Well, I went into a band house once, and first of all, there was somebody had kicked a hole in the bathroom door. And then I went into the bathroom, and the toilet seat had been broken in half and duct taped back on. And I'm going to be here for a week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The other one, we were in a, they had a band house, and like the front door had a gap of about 2 feet, you know. It was like the snow was blowing in through the front door, and we had to sleep in the basement, and the toilet in the basement would just like gurgle and then would overflow inadvertently, you know, sometime during the night. You just hear this, like, oh man.
So true dive bar rock star.
Yeah, man. The dues are paid.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
I did that for a couple of years, and then I finally I had to take a break. It was like, this isn't really going to where I want it to go, and like I need to come back and figure out what's next, you know.
Right.
And I got lucky and found like some good friends, like, you know, just some good people that were just as hungry as me. Mm-hmm. And just as good, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, okay, we are good, and we're gonna make it here. We just got to figure out how.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So I got lucky that way, and one thing led to another. Smart. You know. And it was like, I ended up doing this gig with a guy who he got a record deal for a minute, and it, you know, he was never gonna be a star, mm-hmm, but he got a deal, you know. And
right.
So I got to go out and like actually get on a bus and figure that world out a little bit. And then,
right.
Then that led into Susie Boggess's gig. And then, okay, that was like, okay, now I have a real gig.
Right.
You know? And from that point on, I just haven't stopped, you know, just one thing just led to another, and that gig ended, and oh, I'm going to switch and go over here. And, you know,
yeah.
So
that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, how much do you think how much of that do you think is intentional and versus just luck?
Man, I don't think anything's lucky necessarily. I just think you put yourself in those positions and you do a good job and your name gets remembered, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you're meeting people along the way and you're a good person, they're going to remember you. And then they're going to go, oh, wait, man, he can really play and he's cool. So let's call him,
you know,
which is how I got this gig.
Right.
I mean, Anthony Aquilotto. I mean, we worked together in Leanne's band, and he was a production manager, and you know, we got along really well, you know, and friends. And every year, like maybe once or twice a year, you know, we'd call each other or we'd text each other, you know, hey man, you got your safety sandwich? Yeah, I got my safety sandwich, you know. Mm-hmm. just being friends, you know.
Right.
And that's how I got this gig. He called me in 10:30 at night. He said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He's like, answer the phone. You're going to get a phone call in about 15 minutes from Sedona, Arizona. Answer it. I said, okay. You know, so.
Yeah. And the rest is history.
And the rest is history. But yeah, just people you meet along the way. I mean, like, I got Wynonna's gig. I was working with Jody Messina, and there was a guy that was a road manager and another really cool dude, you know, just and obviously knew his shit, you know, and those are the kind of people I want to be around. I want to know what they know. You know, I want to learn from them. And
he knew
that, you know, he knew I was eager. And, you know, he ended up going to work for Winona, and they were having a hard time finding a guitar player. They had gone through, you know, tons of auditions and couldn't find anybody. And they were at the end of their rope, and he went, "Hey, you know, what about Tony?" And so I walked in for the audition, and the monitor guy puts his arm around me as I'm walking in. He goes, "We're all counting on you, kids, so don't fuck up." You know, and I was like, okay, no pressure, you know.
Right.
But it was, you know, go in and just do your thing. You know, play it right. Yeah. And I ended up meeting Bob Britt from that. And I mean, Bob's one of my heroes, you know, to this day still. I mean, he plays guitar for Bob Dylan now, and he's just a super badass player. Mm-hmm. I mean, and a guy. But, you know, just, I don't know. There was a time where I had a chance to work for Kenny Chesney early on, and I turned him down, like turned him down twice. And, you know, people have always been like, "Man, do you regret it?" You know, like, no, I don't. You know, I mean, maybe sometimes I regret it just because, I mean, the ride would have been cool and fun and, you know, you'd have maybe made more money, all that kind of stuff. But then I never would have met this person, that person, this person. I never would have met you. You know what I mean? Like, so.
And it all worked out pretty good.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Networking. It's everything.
Yeah. You know? And I'm no good at it. I mean, I'm really not. I can't, I don't toot my own horn at all.
Right.
You know,
it's hard.
It's like, if you like what I'm doing, then hire me. If you don't, okay. I'm not going to convince you otherwise. You
right.
Know?
So, right. Right.
And I don't, I just can't be that guy. I can't be that ego dude that slings bullshit, you know, to make you look better. And I just can't sleep I can't go to sleep at night like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's like, if you dig it, you dig it. If you don't, that's cool.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's really hard. I know. I'm always just like, just show up to the club. You know, like, just get there. If you talk to somebody, great. If not, but the odds of you meeting somebody being there are better than you sitting on your couch.
It's true.
So, you know, at least just get there.
I need to get better at that, because I mean, like, early, you know, my 20s and 30s, I mean, it was like, "Oh, where are we going tonight?" You know, it's like, you know, I'm in bed with the dogs by like 5 o'clock, you know, going, "Oh, this is great." You know,
but well, you also have a gig.
True.
And, you've been here a while, but you know, we're about to have another 2 months off. So
yeah, it's true.
It's like, and sometimes those are opportunities, because that is the tricky thing. It is. You were kind of pointing out, it's like when you're on the road, you can't be home finding gigs.
Right.
So then you get home and you're like, one calls
because
they think you're on the road.
Yeah.
And so it is sort of a juggle, you know?
Yeah. I need to get back out too, just because, like, you know, I've been here for 30 some years, you know, and it's like a lot of the guys that I played with back in the day and stuff like that. So, man, it's like I've outlasted a lot of them, you know what I mean? And it's like, they're gone or they're on to bigger and better things. And so like a lot of the new guys, I don't know who they are. I've never met them, you know, they're, and there's an age gap, obviously, too. But, you know, it's like I do need to, like, throw myself back out into the pool a little bit and just to let people know that I exist, you know.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, too much work is a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like playing music, you know. I do. I like playing. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's fun. It's I mean, our gig is great. Like, so awesome just to be able to go play at that level every night, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I come home, it's like I feel like a failure, because I'm like, God, here I am again, sitting in my bed watching Gunsmoke. I've seen this one 20 times, you know.
I know. I was talking to you about that the other day. I think it was like, it's a matter of 2 or 3 weeks before I kind of forget who I am a little bit, if I'm not doing it all the time. And I don't know if there's some sort of, I don't know, the self-esteem of a musician is fragile.
Yeah,
you know, it is. And it takes me 3 weeks of not working to be like, I suck, you know, like I no one likes me. I'm never going to get hired again. You know,
like, oh, it's so true, man. It is so true.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to come up and just pick up a bass and put it in my hand and be like, yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. That's yeah. what I do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. And then last, you know, we had two privates last month.
Right.
And I got off stage in the first one. I was like, oh, right. We're rock stars. Like yeah. there's more to life than changing diapers and doing the dishes, you know, emptying the dishwasher.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't, it's hard to be away from it.
Right. Take yourself out, dog. I'm busy. You know, I'm rock star in here.
Take exactly.
Go pee in the yard by yourself.
Yeah, totally. So the road thing seems to suit you well.
Like, I love it. Yeah, I do.
So did you make a conscious decision? Because I know I did when I got to LA. I was like, it's going to take me so much energy to do either one. And I just didn't want to be in a studio cave all day long because I love traveling. I love hotels.
Yeah.
Did you have to make a kind of a decision about that, or did it just end up that way?
You know, I think the decision was made for me just because I had to go make money. I had to go make a living, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, when I got here, you know, I told you I moved in with that guy that, you know, graduated, and, you know, within 6 months, like, he like left the key or left the door open, and I was on the road and I got a bunch of shit stolen. And I was like, you're paying for this. He's like, no, I'm not. And I was like, oh, you're not? Okay. So I stiffed him and I moved out like 1 week before rent was due. I was like, okay, buddy, you're paying for it, whether you are or not. And, you know, I was living in a garage behind an apartment complex, you know, watching like the possum stick his paw through my floor and grab my cat food. You know, I was like, dude.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, I was broke and I needed to make a living. The road was the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got out there, you know, same old thing, you know, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've done sessions throughout the, you know, time here, but just, it was never going to be something I would have had to make that decision to come home, stay home, starve for a year or two.
Right.
And work that angle. And,
yeah.
And, you know, the more that I enjoy playing in the studio. It's a whole different mindset than being on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it was like, man, I don't have the political chops to put up with this every day. If I'm going to play your piece of shit song that you wrote, I can't fake it. You know, I'm a horrible liar in that respect. Yeah, it's like, yeah, your song's great. You know, yeah, this is going to be a hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So,
and it's sort of a notorious for us outsiders, you know, it's like notoriously good old boy closed like session thing, you know.
Right.
Do you think it still feels like that? Yes. Or
yeah, I do. And well, I think it's gotten even tighter too, probably because, you know, when I moved here, I mean, man, those dudes were making bank. I mean, they were working three sessions a day. They were doing double, triple scale, you know. I mean, they had it rolling. There were tons of studios. Everybody was recording all the time. I mean, hell, even I could get a session. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was like there were demos going on all the time. And now it's just, you know, you can sit in your house and you can do the same thing. You know, and a lot of people do. They fly, you know, they're just flying tracks back and forth. And it was like, I love playing music with people. You know, there's no better way to be than to have that synergy, you know, that ESP, that oh man, we're cooking, you know. And I knew I wasn't going to get that playing in a studio.
No.
Let's do this take again. Oh, let's punch in. And like I said, I love doing that too, but I love playing live.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like when I think about music and rock and roll, I mean, I think about, you know, Jimmy Page swaggering across the stage, you know, owning it. And I was like, that's why I got into this.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I think we have that in common too. It's like, if I don't get enough, a certain amount of hotel rooms per year, I start to freak out.
Yeah. You know? I dig it. I mean, I'm a kid from Illinois. I mean, small town. I was like 12,000 people, maybe.
Wow.
You know, and I've seen the world twice. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been around the world twice. It's like, I'm a success. That's a success, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go.
Exactly.
Let's go. Where are we going next?
I know. We're all like chomping at the bit, man.
No doubt. I feel like a bear.
It's time to go.
Feel like a bear that just woke up from hibernation. I'm like, yeah, it's on now, brother.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it is, it's an election year.
Yep.
And not to get into any politics or anything, but you've sort of been outspoken about a particular artist that you and you don't have to name him either. And I've also been in an experience where it's like your politics don't match yet.
Right.
You need to keep the gig. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Like you yeah, need yeah, the yeah. money and it is your job. And yep. a lot of times you get in a plane or a bus or whatever. And it's like you're stuck hearing that, you know, like, do you have any tricks for dealing with that? Or you're just a very patient person?
I'm an extremely patient person. Okay. I like to be, I'm very self-contained, mm-hmm. you know, I'm my own best friend. I don't need anybody to like get me through my day, you know?
Right. Right.
So if you're strong constitutionally, you can put up with anything, you know, but that being said, you know, you can push me only so far and then I'm going to bite, you know, and then you're going to know that you stepped too far, you know?
Right. Right.
And I mean, and that's hard when it's your boss that's doing it.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, there comes a time where it's like, yeah, and you can put up with a lot of shit, but I can't put up with that, you know?
Right. Right.
And they got to know that, and they got to know that line's there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being on a bus with people, I mean, God, we're so, you know, enclosed and learning how to give people their space and carving out your own space, you know, mm-hmm. that I think that's important too. So,
yeah.
But I mean, like, yeah, if you're sitting on a, you know, 40,000 feet in a plane and, you know, the guy decides he wants to talk politics and you haven't spoken about it at all and you've been in the band for a year.
Yeah.
But he knows where you stand and I know where he stands.
Right.
And all of a sudden he wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can either, you know, you can either shine him and go, and maybe try to deflect it, or you know, be like, yeah, I'm your Huckleberry, you know, and then you can have that discussion, you know, and at the end of that discussion, he can say, well, if this guy gets elected, you're fired. What do you think about that? And I'm like, well, you know, you're the boss and it's your prerogative. You can do whatever you want, you know?
Right.
And then when you get off the plane, you know, you want to, you know, like smash him in the face. But instead you go home and you sleep and then you get up the next morning and you go to the locker and you get all of your stuff out of the locker and you bring it home. That way when you leave him 5 minutes before bus call, he can go, what happened? Why? You know, and be like, because you're an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thing because, like, I think that I'm really patient too. I can put up with a lot.
A lot.
To the detriment of my health.
Me too. Me too. You know? Same. Yeah.
And I've always been I do this for a living. You know, money matters to me in a way that's. Just his life, you know. It's not like I'm a total mercenary. I care about music and I care about, you know, making an artist happy and everything. But at the end of the day, it's a job sometimes.
It is.
And I think a lot of people don't have that skill or don't realize that's a skill that can get you work.
That is the skill.
And it's sort of the skill that I have but then I go back and forth, but is it good? Because it means I can do that work. And then your name gets out. Oh, he can put up with a guy like that. You should call Eric.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And you end up doing more work like that.
That's true.
You know, it's,
That's tough because, I've done a few gigs like that where, you know, all of a sudden you're in it and then you realize, oh man, I'm really in it. You know, it's like, geez, I knew it was going to be bad, but I didn't know it was going to be this bad.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it was like,
oh, I know.
And, you know, I mean, I did a gig one time with a guy, with this guy, and I knew he was a jerk since 1996. I've known that guy was a, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, but if you're broke, and you need work.
Yeah.
You got to go where the money's at. And, you know, and I ended up doing a gig with this guy and I thought, well, maybe it won't be that bad, you know? And it was worse.
Mm.
And I finally, like after 2 weeks, I came home and they called me and they, well, what do you think? You know, what do you think? What are you thinking? And I said, yeah, this isn't for me. And I was, like I said, I needed the money. I was, you know, I hadn't worked in, you know, 6 months because a guy left us high and dry, you know, it was like, and, you know, at the end of the day, it don't matter what kind of music it is. If you got to make a paycheck, you got to make one.
Right.
But I stood up for myself and went, yeah, you know what? This is a bridge too far. I can't do this, you know? Yeah. So, Yeah, and that's, and I felt better about myself because of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's cool.
I don't know. Being a, being a pro is.
Yeah. I always say I don't have the luxury of choosing the music I like.
I don't. Yeah.
You know, or whatever. I've been so, so as you probably are, I'm so happy to be.
Oh yeah.
In Chicago. Because it is music I grew up with. I love it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it is a luxury to be in a band that you can't wait to play.
That you care about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, you don't have to like turn it on and
We don't talk politics much. I mean, we're on different buses, but.
We don't.
It's generally sort of like, that's another thing about these guys. They've done it so long. I think they bicker amongst each other, but I think as a group, they know what to do and what not to do. It's a very well-oiled machine.
It's the pro's pro, man. They've been doing it for so long that they know exactly how to do all of this, you know? And you leave a lot
and
of
And don't
that.
Talk about this.
No, don't do that.
It's just going to cause problems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it takes a lot of, I don't know, guys like that talk like that and want to like push their agenda or their ego on you. It was like, they're just, to me, they're just not good musicians. You know, I mean, that's not how you're not a musician. If you do that to other people, you know, I mean, musicians are supposed to be inclusive and open and accepting and creative. We're artists, you know, we're fragile.
That's interesting. Cause another thing I often say is like, who you are in a conversation or as a person is who you are as a musician.
Yeah, totally.
And like, if you're a guy who interrupts all the time and says, I know when we got on a stage, you're going to step all over everything
right,
I do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep. That's true, man. That's totally true.
If you're kind of a bullying person, then I'm not going to have room to say what I have to say. You know what I mean? You're not going to ever turn to me and be like, hey, take a solo.
Take one,
or,
yeah. You know, right, like, right. True, man. It's totally true. It's,
so interesting. So we also have in common that we've played with other former members of Chicago. I played with Danny and Bill Champlin.
Yeah.
And you got to play with Peter Cetera.
I did.
For a bit, right? Yeah.
I did. I did like, what was it? I don't know, 4 years maybe, something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how was that? Was that great?
Yeah, it was really cool, man. And it was another one of those things where it was like somebody that you know says, oh, hey, well, you need to call him, you know? And so, I mean, Peter called me up and we had like a 15-minute conversation and then I was in the band, you know? It was like, I met him in the Mexico City airport. You know, it was like first time I ever met the guy. The first show that we ever did was like in the middle of Mexico with snipers on the rooftop, you know, and I'm reading, you know, I had a book, you know, I was reading the book, man, because I didn't have time to learn it, you know,
it
wasn't like this, you know, I didn't have 3 weeks. I think I had like 4 days or something, you know?
Right.
So, and it went well and he's a cool guy and he's still got the chops and I don't know why he doesn't sing anymore. You know, it's like, he just decided he didn't want to do it anymore. So he kind of left us high and dry in that respect. I mean, we had a bunch of shows on the books and he just went, yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But, and so, I mean, again, there you are. You're thrown back into the fire and you got to figure out what you're going to do next.
Yeah.
But it was different though than like what this is. It was, it wasn't as emotive. It wasn't as powerful. You know, I mean, this man, we get up there and we get cooking. And it's like, the hair stand up on my arm sometimes. I'm like, damn, this is really, really good, you know? I never felt that with him. It was always, but it was always very professional. And like I said, he came up one time and was, I didn't know he was there and he sang into my microphone and I literally stopped playing guitar because he was like, you know, like 6 inches away from my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, that voice was just unbelievable. Yeah.
That's so cool.
And I think he was like 71 when he did it. You know, I was like, damn, man.
Wow.
It's like, no wonder millions of people love you.
Yeah.
You know? So,
and you, he played bass as well.
He did.
You told me before. And like, you know, having learned all of his bass lines at the, you know, and for years, it's like, he's one of the most underrated bass players in the history of rock and roll.
I agree with that.
A lot of people don't even know he's a bass player or he was the bass player in the band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They think of him as the Karate Kid, you know,
exactly.
Like,
he's a ballad singer.
He's a funky mofo is what he is. You know, that it was like the notes in between the notes, you know, like the notes that he wasn't playing. It was that. It was like how he came down on a one, or, you know, like just where he put that accent, you know.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, there. And the other bass player was a really, really good bass player and very successful, you know, like, you know, no slouch, you know, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But man, when Peter put that bass on, it was like, oh, there's Chicago. You know, it was like, there it is, you know. And that's the only time I ever felt that, though, with his gig, was like...
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, his phrasing and vocally, that was... yeah, like I say, it was a little more polished and a little more clipped, a little more by the book. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't have all that reckless abandon that Chicago One has. You know what I mean? But I felt it when he put the bass on.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's cool. Did he use a pick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
So he still was.
Well, because he hadn't played in like 30 years.
Wow.
You know, and then when he got in, and I like to think that maybe I take a little credit for it, because I came in and I was, you know, just being rock and roll me, you know, and letting it rip. And I think he got jazzed by that a little bit, you know, and he was like, man, I want to pick this bass up and play it again, you know.
Right.
And, you know, the chops weren't there, and, you know, like, you know, like what this music calls for.
Right.
You know,
right.
But the feel was, you know, so.
And it's so important for those early records. Like, I listened, you know, having to dig into them, it's like, Danny was such a unique drummer. And there's this weird thing where the bass and drums are not always super connected musically, but it works.
Right.
And I think it's a lot, it's more Peter driving the band with the bass and Danny's playing all over it.
You know what it is to me, like, because guitar players and drummers are, you know, there's a special bond there, you know, to have a great drummer behind you as a guitar player means more than anybody else on stage.
Yeah.
You know, just, you got to have that fire to take you somewhere when you're playing a solo and stuff. And I think it was Peter and Terry. They were the engine.
Yeah.
And they were, they were leading Danny where he needed to go, you know, and Danny was more like a Keith Moon almost, you know, like, I'm going to be the bells and whistles. I'm not necessarily going to keep time.
Right.
I'm going to be that guy that goes, you know, and Peter and Terry were going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a very jazz thing.
Right.
Like, I learned in Berkeley, like, the bass is the timekeeper.
Right.
And the, you know, the jazz are, you know, doing everything. And,
right.
And so to apply that to a rock and roll song, it's just, it's epic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, you know, like Townsend. I mean, Townsend was the timekeeper, you know. Entwistle and Moon were over there, you know, playing every note they could.
Yeah.
And Townsend was going bam, ba-ba-bang, you know. And it was like, I love that. I mean, it's like, I think that's where the energy of a band comes from, is like, you know, Jimmy Page pushing something on stage, you know, and Bonham back there, you know. He was different. That was, you know, he wasn't bells and whistles. He was laying it down.
He was on the back of the beat.
Yeah, he was on the back of it. He was giving it the swing.
Yeah, you know?
Nah, it's a, but Terry and Peter were the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool to be a fan in the band.
It is. It's nice deciphering all that stuff and getting into the why.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I was talking with Jimmy one time about, like, the, you know, we talk about Terry because I live on a bus with Jimmy, and you know, so we talk about him from time to time and stuff. And I was telling him, I was like, man, you know, the more you get into what he did and why he did it, it makes so much sense. You know, like, even just his chord inversions, you know, in a rhythm part on the ballet, you know, ballet's just a good example. But it was like, there's a reason that inversion is that inversion, because it fits with the horns.
Right.
You know, you can't just play that chord anywhere and think that it's going to fit or that it's going to feel or sound like Chicago.
Right.
You know,
it
was like, that's the stuff that I get off on. It's like, that's why this is so cool. It's like, because I can figure that out and know why it has to be that way.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
And that goes back to, like you said, you know, earlier, like, well, how did you figure that out by ear? Well, I don't know. It just sounded right. You know, well, how did you figure that out? Well, I don't know. This is where it's supposed to be.
Right.
You know? So you know, it's fun.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. We were rehearsing not too long ago for the Atlantic City show I was talking about. Yeah. And, Robert has this folder and he's like, oh, well, here's the horn chart for listen. And I looked at it and it's like handwritten, penciled.
Yeah.
The original thing that he had written, because that was his first like horn chart that he wrote for the band.
Right.
Was listen.
Right.
And I was just like, man, and this dude's got it in a folder, like a
manila,
you know, like.
And he's
you know,
been carrying.
You should have that in a frame somewhere. Yeah, you know, like that is a valuable.
Yeah, he's and been he's carrying just like, around oh, well, for 57 years.
Yeah. Like, oh well, here's this. You need this. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, look at that.
I took a picture of that. I did. I was like, oh my God, look at that, man. I sent it to my brother. I was like, holy shit, this is the original.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. He's wow. like, he said, steal it. I was like, no, I'm not gonna steal it.
Yeah. But I really appreciate you coming down, man.
Yeah.
And we leave on Saturday, just woohoo. And I can't wait.
I can't wait. I got to get out there, man. I was on I hate Instagram, but I got back on there just for the hell of it. And
yeah,
a guitar player friend of mine is out on the road, and he took a video of you know, the bus just going down the road, you know, just sitting in the jump seat, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, and I was looking at it, and I was watching it, and I just got so like wistful, and I was like. Oh, a musician's living room. Look, there it is. You know, I was like, I can't wait to see that and just sit down on the jump seat and say, Jeff, take me somewhere.
Yeah, man. It's a privilege to do what we do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. We're lucky.
So, well, thanks, man. I'll see you out there.
Yes, you will. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All right. Peace.
Man, I just love being on the road with this guy and being able to be a bandmate with him. And we get to have these awesome talks all the time while we're out there on the road. A lot of times they involve a little more beer, I will say that. But it was nice to be sober as well and talk about all this stuff. I really liked when he was talking about how he scheduled his practice time, because it's just such an important skill to know and to learn if you're going to be playing on this level with these type of bands. Because most of the time, this stuff comes in last minute. This is not unusual. In fact, he probably felt lucky that he had 3 weeks, because a lot of times these gigs just come up and you just got to go. And so time management is just so important to figure it out. And if you don't think you have enough time, it's really important to not panic. Like, sometimes I look at the bulk of the stuff and I just get overwhelmed. It's really important to not panic and just do it a tune at a time. And most of the time, you're going to have enough time. Just don't panic. Don't freak out. Just start learning. And it will always benefit you to learn the songs right the first time. So take the right amount of time on each tune and just trust that you're going to get through them. That's the key. And most of the time you will, like I said. So at least give the first few songs whatever time it takes to really know them. And I mean, like, if it takes you an hour to get through a song, you've got to play it 5 or 10 times, do that. And then you're going to know after the first 3 songs or so how long each song takes you on average. And then you can really start to plan how much time you're going to need and how much sleep you're going to miss. And if you still don't have enough time, then I always think it's better to know the majority of the show really well and maybe have a couple of tunes at the end that you didn't get to, or you can write a quick chart on. And, you know, rather than like the whole show is shaky because you didn't spend enough time. So really spending some time on the majority of everything you get and really knowing it is better than just having half-assed through everything. And you also, as you do this, you kind of begin to identify this type of songs or the songs that aren't going to take you as much time. Like, I'm a ballad guy. So when I look and I see the ballads, I say, well, I take that stuff in really well. It comes fast. So I'm going to put those towards the end. Let's identify the hard stuff that you're really going to have to spend time on and get that done first and foremost, because you're also probably going to need more time just to get it into your brain and into your muscle memory. So That's a couple of suggestions on how I get through the stuff, and it sounds like he's got the same kind of vibe. Dee Murray was Elton John's bass player. And a fractal is a multi-effects processor and an amp simulator, similar to a Kemper or a Line 6 Helix, that basically replaces guitar amps on stage. And I'd like to leave you with a bit of my new single that you can find on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever there's music. And it's an old Harry Nilsson song called Me and My Arrow that I recorded in honor of my stepdad, Craig, who passed away over the summer. This song is a part of a children's album called The Point, and my step-siblings and I used to listen to it over and over as kids and just loved it. It's a really great album. So this one goes out to them and to my mom and everyone who knew Craig. He was a great man and was very loved. So I hope you enjoy it, and I will talk at you next time.
Me and my arrow. Arrow. Me and my arrow.
Wow, you've made it to the end. I'm hoping it's because you completely enjoyed yourself and are now filled with knowledge and inspiration to move forward with your dreams. If that is the case and you would like to stay informed of new episodes, live events, and general news, please go to divebarrockstar.com and sign up for the mailing list. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or complaints about anything you hear on the show, please email me at fanmail@divebarrockstar.com and you may even end up on the show. We at the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, with all of our hearts, thank you for listening, and remember, it's all about dreams.